On today's episode, we're going to get the opportunity to explore our takeaways with Shannon Allen. Fantastic episode there, with the heart of it being Embrace the Suck. Probably the best title ever created. We're getting Chuck Jaffe joining us on the show today to discuss an article that was recently released within the last week or so, talking about his take on the financial independence movement. A few more details on our book release going live on October 1st. And an interesting take on skills versus degrees. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Let's go ahead and dive into this week's roundup. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. Yeah, what's going on in your world?
You know, things are pretty calm in the Madonza household at the moment, Brad, but I will say I've been reflecting on, I was just thinking about a movie that I saw like back in the late 90s. And I think it was like A Kid in King Arthur's Court or something like that. I think it was like, there's been multiple versions of this throughout time, but the idea is like this individual from modern era goes back to, you know,
prehistoric time.
Yeah, round table, right? He's round table in it. And the premise of that is usually that this individual is bringing back with them all these ideas, all these skills that they have learned that are useful because no one else has thought or contemplated these skills. And this kind of depressing thought hit me, like, if I were to go back, you know, before all this stuff was invented, I would have no idea how any of this stuff works. I would not be able to explain it. I would not be able to produce it. I would not be able to get us there. And that epiphany is like kind of like sad, because you're like, oh man, if only I thought to have the idea. But now the idea is already out there. You could learn anything, but you know nothing. And that's kind of like that. I mean, that to me, that gets me to move and say, well, man, it's probably useful to know at some level how something works, how to do something, even if you're not going to find that time machine and go back in time and completely, you know.
So, okay, I got to stop you. Is this an intellectual exercise?
It's an intellectual exercise that started with A Kid in King Arthur's Court.
Okay. So, I mean, do you want to learn precisely like how to recreate electricity? Like, I mean, is that what we're talking about?
Not at its core level, but I think if you come back away from that, really at its heart, it's skills, right? I mean, we spend so much time consuming information, but do we take advantage of the fact that it's incredibly easy to learn a skill and then implement that selfishly in our own life? Right? I mean, this is kind of like, take that out. No, I'm probably not going to go learn how to braid my own copper wire and learn how to like, you know, make some of these amazing machines. I might watch, you know, a little How Stuff Works here and there, but I could become a more useful person. And this goes again to that idea of the talent stack. Now, we've talked about the talent stack in the past. It was an idea that you introduced to me. You heard about it from
the author, Scott Adams.
And for our audience, people that haven't heard us reference it before, it's this idea that you start making connections. You follow whatever it is that you're interested in, and you don't have to be world-class in anything, but if you can become, you know, proficient in enough different things that are seemingly unrelated, at some point in time, it's almost inevitable you're going to start making connections that other people aren't seeing. And that is the heart of why I get so excited about this idea of talent stacking. I was never, am never, will never, limiting belief, but hear me out, going to be a world-class athlete. It's not going to happen. But I do think that I could be better than average on so many different things, almost an overwhelming number of different things, that at some point in time, and I've already seen this now, I've been able to make these connections that other people just weren't making, and being able to craft a life for myself that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I think this is a very powerful concept where there are so few people who are truly world-class at anything. But to Scott Adams' point, and that's in the book, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. And it's really a brilliant book. If you're even just top 10 or 20% at something, which is highly, highly proficient, but certainly no one would call you world class. Mm. If you put these skills together, you really can find these things that other people just are not seeing. And it's also having a diverse set of skills, right? That's the crucial part. If you just knew and you were top 10% at a very narrow set of skills, but albeit discrete different skills, I wouldn't argue that that's a talent stack. I would look at it as, how can I be a wide-ranging person and then have my brain kind of put these things together? And Jonathan, I've talked ad nauseum about this with my own accounting background and the skills that I picked up building websites and creating websites. And I was able to look at a problem a little bit differently, where I was never going to get a lot of traffic to my original website, Richmond Savers, but I was able to put an accountant's hat on and say, okay, I can make this thing successful by operating it as a hybrid real world online business. Mm-hmm. So that was the talent stack that not many accountants are creating travel rewards websites, right? They just simply aren't. So I was able to just look at that problem a little bit differently. And again, that quote to me is the hallmark of why you want a talent stack, because you can look at problems slightly differently. And ultimately, right, the upshot of this is to succeed wildly at life, right?
Absolutely. And so, like, to tie a thread to something that we talked about this past week on our in our email list, on our team, Ed, who's actually our CEO here at ChooseFI, he this past year took a course that Mike and Bobby from Laptop Empires created, talking about creating a Facebook digital ad agency. Now, Facebook ads are probably one of the hottest skill sets. Being able to create custom ads for small businesses is one of the most in-demand digital skills that you can possess currently. Objectively, Ed came back to me and said, I've taken a bunch of courses. This was one of the best I have ever taken, carte blanche. And because of that, we went ahead and shared it with our email list. And so many of you actually went ahead and checked it out, and many of you purchased their course. And I understand why. It's a great course. But a few people were kind of like, oh, wow, it's not free. Why is it not free? And my thought was like, and this is where I got stuck. I was like, as a society, we don't question a degree at any cost. We'll spend $20,000, $40,000, $200,000 for a degree without ever questioning what will the ROI be on that degree. What possibility is there that I'll get a job with this degree? Well, I got the degree. You know, it's a $200,000 degree. Yes, it is. Are you going to get on a job on the other side? But then we will invest nothing into actual skills. I, for the life of me, don't understand why we get so excited. Everybody has to get a degree. Everybody has to get a degree. And don't acknowledge the fact that what we really need are skills, employable skills, skills that will return income for us. I think this course, and I'm sure it'll go up over time, but I think right now it's still less than $500, like far less than $500. And the people that are in this course are raving about it. I mean, they're telling me I'm getting jobs basically right out the gate. I found my first client. And if it wasn't even for a job that they found because they're acting as a consultant, there are small business owners that are taking this course because they are the client. Like, if talking about adding to your talent stack, you have a small business, you're working in a town and in your blue collar industry, just for this example, nobody is crushing the ad game. So everybody's relying on traditional mediums, and you add this to your talent stack and you start experimenting with it because you know the rules now, and you're able to 10X your volume from a revenue stream that, like, I tell you what, you know, I wanted to get a landscaper to help me with a project in my yard. You know how I found my landscaper? There was like a business card that got littered in my cul-de-sac and like slid up, you know, somewhere in my driveway, and we just happened to find it. And because I didn't have a better way, I didn't have like any, you know, I was like, well, I'll just give him a shot. Like, there is clearly an opening there for someone to be competitive and lean into landscaping in my local district. You know, that's the sort of thing that's out there. So apply this to your own field, your own industry. Business owners desperately need help bridging the gap because they don't have the skill set. And if you are a business owner and you have this, you can bridge the gap yourself. It's incredibly valuable. But someone says, well, I don't want to pay to improve myself. Like, fine, you can learn this for free. You don't have, but it's going to take more time. You're going to have to do a lot more digging. You're going to have to vet the good information from what's out of date, what's older, find a community to help support that effort. I'm all about doing it yourself, but just recognize that, you know, there's a cost to everything. In that case, it's probably the time cost of actually having to go and vet good information versus bad information.
Yeah, no, obviously this riles you up, but I get both sides. But I think that it comes down ultimately to societal expectations. And I think what we do here at ChooseFI and in the FI community generally is we look at things differently. This is what we're talking about with building skills. So building skills to us, that's what's crucial. Societal expectations are, yes, you go to college, you don't think about the ROI, you go for 4 years.
Until senior year.
Right. You spend any amount of money. And Maybe there are skills, maybe there are not. Maybe there's a job at the end, maybe not. Who knows? And you don't question it. Whereas what I think with the online world is everyone is so used to everything being free. So this is the expectation. And even the thing that actually, if we want to get on little rants here, the thing that galls me is when people talk about apps, free apps, and, oh, I would never pay for an app. That's $2.99. You mean you're telling me that you're getting something that's going to add significant value to your life and it's $2, $3, $4, and you won't do it just because everything has to be free online? That is the height of silliness. To me, it ultimately comes down to value, right? That's what all of this comes down to. You need to just shut off the noise and just say, is there value here for me, right? So for me, I actually bought a podcast app. And I know that sounds silly. It was like $3, but I loved the free version of it. And they had added functionality. And I wanted to spend the $3. It's $3, a one-time fee. That was a no-brainer for me. This Facebook ad thing. I know many, many people who have made a business of being basically a VP of Facebook ads. And they can charge thousands and thousands of dollars per month as a fee because this is a skill that is in demand. That's up to you. Could you learn this on your own? Yes, you absolutely could. You unquestionably could. You can learn it on YouTube. You could cobble things together.
Maybe
you should. But if someone that you trust puts together something that you think there's value, then is it a ridiculous notion to buy it? Is it ridiculous? No, of course not. But
it's not so much like what you do for yourself. Like if you personally decide, you know what, I'm gonna figure this out on my own. More power to you. Do it. I mean, that's I respect, man. But are you gonna like judge someone else for like purchasing a course to better their skill? That's the part that drives me crazy. I can't believe you would pay for a course. Guilty.
Yeah. No, and it's funny. I have a friend Vincent Puglisi who actually has a new podcast called the Total Life Freedom Podcast, which is phenomenal. It's a 5 to 10 minute podcast daily, actually, Jonathan. I don't know if you're listening to this or not, but it's really phenomenal. And he talked about how important it is to invest in yourself. Mm. And I forget what the number is, so I don't want to misquote him, but he puts a sizable percentage. It's probably like 5 or 10%, but I mean, that's a big number of his yearly expenses on self-improvement.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who has basically transformed his entire life. I mean, if you go back and look at his story in the book Freelance to Freedom to where he is today, it's really remarkable. And he introduced us to the Red X month, which I just love. Actually, I didn't tell you, I just planned my trip for next August, our family trip.
So, where are you guys going?
Never mind, sidebar. Yeah. No, I'll give all the details on a future one. This is a guy who spends money on self-improvement. And I think to each his own, obviously, but I have seen more and more people in my life who I consider high performers, people like Dominic Cortuccio. I know he spends on self-improvement and it's what you value and it's what you want to do to build skills that can put together a more diverse talent stack. I think that's the key to me.
I think if you were to look at your budget and you were to break your budget down into different categories and you were to look at one of those categories that's entertainment and another one that's like self-improvement, right? And your entertainment is like a factor of 5, what you're spending on building your skills, building, you know, developing your person, you probably need to do some realignment there. I mean, just in terms of like satisfaction levels, like we will pour, and I think our community is better than most, but if you think about on average, what you're pouring into Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and cable and internet and all these different factors, like, you know, what is that entertainment? What does that subscription entertainment budget actually look like? And then what are you putting into developing a skill set? Especially if you feel like you're hitting, your skills have become stagnant. Like they're not translating into this current era. What are you doing about it? You could make small changes now. You could get new information that can really set you up for wonderful opportunities down the road. I think that's part of it. It's just getting a little bit in front of it. Not with the pressure of, oh, something needs to happen tomorrow. But like, if you can start to make some of these connections, you're really setting yourself up for when this pivot happens in your life. When you really decide to claim that control that you may have started to build with just having some savings in your life, having some margin. But then you want to do something that quote unquote is risky. You want to pivot into another field that really lights you up. It's helpful if you've started to cultivate the skills that will allow you to do that ahead of time. And to our audience, for those of you on the email list, we sent out an email about this course this past week. If you did not get that, certainly you could be on our email list going forward. Just go to chooseify.com/subscribe. If you're interested in the course that we're mentioning, please, if you do not want to spend money on skills, if this did not resonate with you, if you either want to learn it yourself, YouTube is your friend. Go to YouTube. You're going to find some great information there. But if you wanted to check out this course, just go to chooseify.com/hustle. All the details for the program that we mentioned will be there. All right, let's go ahead and switch gears here, Brad, and talk about this episode with Shannon. That was an incredible episode.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I take notes, I jot down quotes. I had to stop like every 30 seconds, it felt like, to jot down another amazing quote. I mean, I have quite literally, Jonathan, 2 pages of quotes here. It's remarkable. I mean, just some of these, I wouldn't change a single thing about my life. I made those choices and I own them. How awesome is that? She said she's looking at the FI movement as it gave a larger purpose to why I was saving my money and a long-term strategy that I feel is a lot more sustainable. I think you see this narrative arc of her life that, sure, some things have gone wrong, just like in all of our lives. I think this is really important that we stop for a second and say, there are very, very few, if any, people who have had this just magical run of an easy life, right? We all have hardships. And I think it's really important that we hear these stories over and over again. So everyone knows this is not just a straight upward trajectory. There are things that go wrong. I've talked ad nauseum about like the horrific, probably after all is said and done, $1 million mistake that I made with real estate speculating when I was in my 20s. Do I think about that and say like, oh, I wish I could undo it? I mean, yeah, maybe in the deepest, darkest recesses of my mind. But honestly, that has made me a better person. I think it's brought me to a point now where I see the folly of that and I could never imagine doing that again. But life without adversity is not a life well lived. You have to overcome things. That's the way it works. And you can't beat yourself up. I think this is something that a lot of people fall prey to is we beat ourselves up over these past mistakes. I mean, talk about a waste of mental energy. There is no point to that. It's the same as worrying about the future. Like you get this anxiety and you have no control over that. The past is the past. You have to take the lessons and move forward intelligently. And I think Shannon might be the single best example I've seen of that.
You know, Brad, when she was working through her story and she was talking about all these different instances of just really things, I mean, talk about adversity. There was a lot of stuff, everything in there from financial infidelity with her spouse or her partner at this particular point in time and basically having this feeling in her gut that like, no, this is not going to work out and having the courage to just walk away, right? I mean, you're like, at some point when you're engaged, you kind of feel like you're like, I'm all in already and, you know, maybe we can work it out. Maybe. There's a lot of trust going on. There's some trust issues there in the background with this financial infidelity. She listened to her gut. She walked away with this wire fraud. There were just these moments and she kept trying to stop it and stop it and stop it. And these caretakers around her, these people that were supposed to be helping her, you know, they just let it go. They just let the path of least resistance. Let's just keep moving forward. And it was massive. She lost like $50,000 to wire fraud. And thankfully, due to just leaning into it and being incredibly persistent, probably a higher degree of persistence than I would have had, she was able to reclaim that. I think what I loved about it is actually not only like, here's the how south it actually went, but here are the tactics that I used to be able to nip it in the bud. I wonder how prevalent wire fraud is. I mean, it seems like in a day where you hear about phishing scams going on all the time and all these two-factor authentication, and now that's not even enough to protect you. And, you know, the hackers and scammers are more sophisticated than ever. I mean, the fact that she was able to reclaim this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And she said, slow down. Not only trust your gut, but slow down sometimes. Things move along quickly because honestly, the people you're working with, they make money when they close this deal and they move on. But you have to trust yourself. And she said she had faith that everyone else was looking out for her best interests. This is not to say that all people are bad. I mean, that's certainly not what I'm implying here. In any way, there are many, many, many good actors. There are good people that want to help you. But at the end of the day, this comes down to you. The person you have to trust is you. The person who's looking out for you more than anyone is very obviously you. That doesn't mean don't rely on experts. It doesn't mean go through life in this distrustful manner. It just means you have to look out for yourself and you have to trust your gut. And I think that's really important because a lot of people just want to outsource. They want to outsource the expertise to somebody. They just want it to be easy. How many times have I said this, Jonathan? 1,000 times in this podcast. I look for simplicity in life, and I genuinely do, but that doesn't mean that I give up control of everything. I have to find areas, and I get things. I front load the sacrifice, right? It's like what Paula talked about a couple of weeks ago is passive income doesn't mean, as she said, it doesn't mean it's on easy street from day one. You have to front load the sacrifice. So that means putting in the work, putting in the time and the effort up front to get things, in my case, to run more smoothly or find those people that I trust. But again, you have to always be aware. As she said, it could even be someone you've worked with in the past. Maybe life has changed for them. You still need to trust your gut. You need to figure out, is this a person I want to work with? So you have to constantly reevaluate. You can't just set something and then wake up 20 years later and expect it to be perfect. You have to continually reevaluate. And I think at the end of the day, this trust your gut is really, really important.
I want to kind of pivot here just for a second and talk about sharks in the water. This is something that we've talked about in the past, but I have a couple points that I want to make. One is, this is incredibly unuseful to the vast majority of our audience, but if you happen to be in Richmond, Virginia, Brad and I used Raven Sickle because you recommended her and she crushed it for us as my real estate agent. I mean, absolutely amazing, protecting us on both ends of the transaction. And then with our mortgage company, Missy Bass with CNF Mortgage did a wonderful job. What I wanted to say is when you're doing a real estate transaction, there is a lot of money changing hands. Sharks are in the water looking for ways to pick you off. And Missy, who worked with us on the mortgage side, basically said, once you close this thing in your mail, maybe she gave the same conversation to you, in your mailbox, you're going to start getting tons of letters from letterheads that look very close to CNF Mortgage, but it's not exactly the same. You'll notice there's something slightly off. This is not us. This is a scam. Avoid it at all costs. Sure enough, as soon as we closed on the house and we were done, I got reams of invitations to use various services from companies that looked very close to the mortgage company that I had actually used. And maybe they were offering mortgage insurance or some sort of deed protection or whatever, just random stuff, looking for ways to snipe and get these little fees off the bottom. And I'm sure because they're continuing to do this, that there's some level of return there that people are filling out these forms. Another example, more practical, more useful for people. When you're going out and you're picking out your advisor, I had a buddy, good friend of mine, actually went to the fire documentary. He's on fire, man. We're putting together a fire plan. He wanted to come talk to me about the changes he already made and what he wanted to do. Said that he was reading the Tony Robbins book, Money, Master the Game. Is that right? Okay. After that book, I mean, he heard a lot of the same principles that we talked about. And he went to his work to go talk to their advisor. And he knew right away to ask, you know, are you a fiduciary? And the advisor said, yes, yes, I am. And so the advisor asked him next, what are your goals? And he gave him the answer. And the advisor is going to come back with a plan. And so I'm talking to him just, you know, he's still waiting to get the feedback from whatever goals he told this advisor. And I'm talking to him about, you know, kind of our general ethos, so, you know, how we would tackle, you know, setting up and preparing for financial independence, planning for it. And then he told me he's going to go back in with this advisor next week. And I said, okay, just real quick, one last thing. You said your advisor was a fiduciary. When we talk to Kyle and to Danny, the question they says, it's not enough to be a fiduciary. You need to ask them very specifically, are they a fiduciary in every aspect of their business, right? Because you can be a fiduciary over here, but then, no, don't look over here. And so I asked him, one thing to watch out for, and this is a really good sign, is just see if the first thing they recommend is whole life insurance. If at the end of this conversation, the first thing that they recommend to you, no matter what you said your goals were, was I think you need to get whole life insurance. I think it's probably like a gateway sign that you need to flee the building. Because whole life insurance, talk about incentive alignment, and whole life insurance is like one of the most fee and commission laden products that an advisor can sell. It's like payday. I mean, that and exorbitant assets under management fee, those two things. So I was just watch out for it. You know, like you don't know, I don't know what he's going to say yet. So I can't really tell you like whether or not I would agree with his advice, but just like look out. One, you want to know when you get in this conversation, like, is this an assets under management model? If so, how much is it? What are my fees exactly? And then two, just kind of watch for this little sidebar, because if they immediately goes to whole life insurance as a recommendation, you know that this is someone that was going to say that no matter what your situation was. Because imagine you tell someone you're pursuing financial independence. So you are pursuing getting to the point where working is optional, so you don't replace the income. And if they immediately come back with, well, you need insurance for your whole life, and you should pay a premium to do that because, oh, this is what rich people do. No, 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 my friend, that is not incentive alignment. That is not in your best interest. And that's a great flag for you that you probably want to have a second conversation with somebody else that is not incentivized to be selling you whole life insurance. All right, both of you, I apologize. I'm kind of ranty today, like in the best possible way. This is your friend just watching out for you over here. Objective. I don't have anything to gain either way, but like, this is what I, this, if I were going to go into a conversation with an advisor, these would be like questions on my mind. How are you paid? Which is fine. If you're, you know, it's fine. Just, I want to know. And then also if you tell me after I tell you, I'm not interested in whole life insurance. If you still tell me that what I need is whole life insurance, the conversation is over. Gosh, I'm getting back into a rant.
Yeah, Jonathan, you are on fire today.
Let's bring MK into this conversation.
Hey, welcome, guys. MK. Yeah, this is all great information for our group. And I think that's one of the best things about the community is that, you know, you guys referenced your realtor in Richmond, Virginia. I'm not in Richmond, Virginia. That doesn't help me too much. But if you go to your local group, so chooseify.com/local, find your local group. They're a great resource. Whether you're looking for a realtor, you're looking for a financial advisor, you're just looking for somebody to do your lawn. This is a great resource of people who are like-minded. They're going to be saying, hey, they're the best price, they're the best value, and they can give you this information that they act in your best interest. And to go off of Jonathan's epic comments on whole life insurance, we often get people asking us in the group, like, why aren't you talking about whole life insurance? All the reasons that Jonathan just said is why we're not talking about it. It's something that we just can't get behind because of all the fees, and we don't think it's going to bring you value. So that is why everybody who's asking, we're not talking about infinite banking. Just listen to what Jonathan just said.
Oh, Jonathan. No, it's great. And, you know, just kind of going back to Shannon's story here, she's talking about every accomplishment is worth celebrating. One quote that I loved is, those big accomplishments come from a series of small choices that often go unnoticed. I think that is crucially powerful. And it's that aggregation of marginal gains, right? It's the 1% better. It reminded me of this YouTube video that I watched, this 3.5-minute YouTube video called The Choice. And it's basically this really cute little animated video, and it's a split screen. So it's this animated person starting at the same time. They go through the guy's life with just these slight little changes in choices. So you're seeing it, and it's the one guy's eating well. The one guy's eating potato chips. The one guy is marking things off on his to-do list. The other guy is just not doing anything. The one guy's meditating. The one guy's watching TV. One guy's listening to talk radio versus the other one listening to an audiobook in his car. Going to the gym versus staying out late and drinking beers. Each of these individual items are not going to lead to really anything in the short term. But over the long term, at the end of this video, and I want to ruin it for everybody, and we will link this up in the show notes, but the one guy is this buff, successful, animated character, and the other guy is unhappy and overweight and not doing terribly well in life. And at the end, it says, small choices become actions. Actions become habits, and habits become our way of life. And I just love that. It gives me goosebumps when I read it. And it really is true. Guys, it's these little things. You can't beat yourself up about things in the past, but you can just get a little bit better tomorrow and every tomorrow thereafter. And the little things are the big things in life. They truly are. And like Shannon said, celebrate your accomplishments no matter how little they are.
Brad, that video is incredible. We're going to link that up in the show notes for the episode. Definitely watch that this week if you haven't watched it yet. And I wanted to take just an opportunity. I'm pulling up the information right now just to discuss our book launch on infinite banking and all the time. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, yes. No, but we are, true story here, we are releasing our book, Choose FI, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. It does not discuss infinite banking or whole life insurance for the reasons that maybe we just mentioned a few seconds ago, but it does focus on the 80-20, the Pareto's principle of the principles that will move you and your family, change your life direction, and help you see financial independence as an achievable goal. This is doable. These small actions, you know, talking about this video, the small choices that you make, they do make the difference. Not like, you know, tomorrow you may not feel it, but when you start piling up enough of these small wins over time, you can see it. You can see how with this fork in the road that Brad, that you just described, those two individuals are headed in two completely different directions. not because of anything at a macro level, because of these small choices that are built into patterns and habits over their life. This is what this book wants to help you do. It wants to give you the principles so that you can see it. You know, I think so many of us, we think that there's secrets, right? We think the secret is whole life insurance. The secret is infinite banking. The secret is having the guy. It's just knowing the rules. It's knowing simple rules that you can implement day over day to build these habits into your life. That's what we want to accomplish with this book. The book is titled Choose FI, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. It is going to be live on October 1st, anywhere that books are found. It is available for pre-order now at choosefi.com/book. We do have some additional information as well. MK, why don't you go ahead and tee that up for us?
Yeah, so it's really exciting to see the culmination of a year and a half, 2 years of work coming out on Tuesday, October 1st. So we're very excited. We actually had some advanced reviews come out this week from the Pioneers and Stealth Wealth family. So thank you for taking the time to read it early and get a review out to your audiences. Next week, in addition to the book coming out, we are also going to have our first stop for our book tour. It will be in Detroit. It's actually in Farmingham, which is a little further out of Detroit. But Joe from Stacking Benjamins is helping to put this together along with GreenPath. So the Choosify local group in Detroit will be there along with Andy Hill from Marriage, Kids, and Money, Amy from Life Simplified, Chris Mamula, who is one of the authors of the book, will be there to do a live Q&A. There'll be a book purchase, book signing afterwards, but the event itself is free. There is limited seating though. So Joe did ask me to reiterate that people do need to RSVP because there is limited seating. It's free to attend. And we expect it to close out very soon, if it hasn't already, by the time this airs. So in that regard, if you've secured your spot, but something comes up and you can't make it, please cancel your registration so somebody else can attend instead, because we're getting a lot of interest, which is very exciting. Our second tour stop is going to be in Salt Lake City on October 12th. And the third stop will be in Richmond, Virginia on October 23rd. All of the details, all of the RSVP forms are on choosefi.com/book as well. So if you're in the area, please stop by. We'd love to see you and talk about the book with you.
All right. If you were listening to our show last week, you heard us mention Chuck Jaffe's article, and actually Brad was highlighting this. It was kind of a look at the FinCon that had just previously happened, and the title of the article, syndicated article, Making Gaining Choice and Not Early Retirement Your Real Goal. I mean, this is kind of one of those articles that makes you stop in your tracks and just say, this is an objectively good look at the community. I mean, this is well-rounded. It's well-reasoned. This isn't a straw man. This is just someone that's been in this industry for a long period of time, making a compelling case for what he thinks this community is really about. I mean, Brad, it was enough. It stood out enough to you that you raised it on the show. And by the end of it, I was a huge fan. So,
yeah. And I am a newspaper reader, certainly. So I'm a lifelong newspaper reader, going back to Long Island Newsday and New York Times that arrived at my doorstep every day. And that continues now. So we get the Richmond Times-Dispatch and the Washington Post. And it was cool to open up the Times-Dispatch and see this article, not only about the FIRE movement, but about FinCon, which was really neat. It's pretty wild now to see multiple articles in major newspapers about what we're talking about here. And, you know, Chuck, I want to bring you in here and say, well, first, welcome, obviously. And second, I want to dive into that conversation you had with this 20-something member of the FIRE movement who essentially said, you don't qualify as FIRE.
Well, first off, guys, thanks very much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. You know, I would have told you at one point that I didn't qualify as FIRE because FIRE, as it was first presented to me, was kind of like, this is a movement. And I can tell you, I never joined a movement. This is just what I've done my whole life. So the interesting side to me was when I have this conversation, a lot of people will assume that because I'm mainstream media, that I somehow don't like the FIRE movement, or because I know lots of traditional financial advisors that I'm not in favor of FIRE. It was very interesting because I came to the realization that, well, maybe someone else had to join a movement. This is just how I've been. Okay, so I didn't go off and have a debt problem. So, you know, I joke all the time that if you drive down my cul-de-sac, you will see my Volkswagen and my next-door neighbor's Jaguar. But in our garages at night, my Volkswagen looks every bit as nice as his Jaguar. I never bought into, oh, I've got to buy a nicer car. I've got to do whatever. So I didn't join a movement. And that, I think, was part of this guy's thinking was like, well, no, you can't be FIRE because you haven't just kind of come out and said, you know, this is how you do it. And I give up all these things. I didn't have to give up much because, I don't know, I guess I was raised with a different sensibility than like, oh, let me try to keep up with my neighbors. So I found it very interesting. And then there was the other side where he said, well, you know, and you have no plans to retire. I have a great gig. I wake up every morning and get to talk to really, really smart people about stuff that's important. I don't understand why I'd ever want to give up that gig. Like, I'm excited every day when I open my eyes. So it was interesting to me. I wound up having the discussion, and it's not all, of course, in the column. I'm kind of like, wait, so are you fired because you drive an Uber for your side gig? And I started freelancing when I was 14. So freelance writing, or I also officiate lacrosse games. Like, what? Because I don't have your preferred side gigs? Like, none of it made sense to me. But that brought up that other point, which is, I think what everybody misses is A, how they're defining financial independence, and B, how they're defining retire early, which, as I put in the story, was gain. I prefer to hear gaining choice, but if you want to keep the acronym, and you need a good acronym or nobody's going to follow it, reset early works. Financial independence, reset early. For most people, that's what they're doing. For me, the reset completely different than anybody else. I got let go from the corporate world a few years ago. The reason you still see my column in Richmond or in Seattle, wherever, is because I didn't have to say, oh, let me go find a new corporate job. And that, by the way, the ability to say, I want to live my life on my terms, that to me is financial independence.
Yeah, and I think that blogger that you met is, at least in my experience, in the significant minority of the people that I know in the FI movement. We don't even term it here. We really very rarely use FIRE because the retire early has such negative connotations to it. It's a wonderful acronym, right? It's cute. It has that ring to it. But retire early, that's not what we're running towards, right? As you said, gaining choice. I think that's the key. That's what people really are looking for. They're looking for freedom. They're looking for autonomy. And we get so few years, precious decades on this planet. And to waste it doing something that doesn't light you up. You're excited about what you do every single day, but a lot of people aren't. So to me, pursuing financial independence is about gaining that autonomy and having freedom and choices.
There's no question about it. It's interesting because so many people who go to the movement side of it, well, they actually have to be moved, right? I consider this blogger, who I think is roughly the same age as my oldest daughter. Now, my oldest daughter moved to Chicago and lives on her own. She is launched. She is basically a starving artist. However, she needs no help from me. And my favorite conversation with my stockbroker was a recent one where he said that what he likes best about my children is how little he knows them. And I said, that's a really weird thing to say. And he said, yeah, but you set up stock accounts for your kids when they were born. You manage their stock accounts until they were 18 and then basically told them, I'll watch over it until you become 21. And at that point, it's your money. Take it and do whatever you want with it. And he said, I don't know your kids because they haven't raced to get their money out. He goes, pretty much everybody else that I've ever seen do what you did, their kids are, how quickly can I get my hands on my money so I can go spend it? My daughter is like, hey, I moved to Chicago. I had no job. I had no idea what I was going to do, but I knew how long I could live there before I ran out of money. She's living the life that she wants to lead. It certainly is not about money because she could go off and do a lot of things that would get her paid better, but that's what she's into. Now, my daughter's not going to retire anytime soon. My daughter's not making so much money that she can truly get way ahead. But my daughter's getting by in a big city on a very small salary. And oh, by the way, funding a Roth IRA and not raiding all of her resources. That's pretty good.
Chuck, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your story, and in particular, gaining choice. You said make gaining choice and not early retirement your real goal. And that seems in particular pertinent in your situation. I mean, you're working in an industry that's had massive upheaval. I mean, there's many industries that have had massive upheaval, but I can't imagine one that's more prominent than media. I'm curious, if you look at these inflection points in your life, when did you realize that you had gained choice and you chose to stay in the industry? When did you realize that that was now like power that you were wielding?
Well, so let's do a little bit of backstory, because I'm still a nationally syndicated columnist, but what it means now is a lot different from what it meant at the peak of syndication. My dad used to go off and use this formula to try to figure out how many readers it was. And there was a point where I was basically in 100 newspapers around the country, most of the top 75, and it's like something like 20 million readers a week estimated. And now I'm in like under a dozen newspapers, because most have gotten rid of their business section. And I knew for a long time that I was a dinosaur. When I was with MarketWatch and Dow Jones, I watched a whole bunch of people lose their jobs, and I knew that I was kind of a nice pet for my boss to have. And then there came a point where they basically took five of us who had a lot of experience, both at the company and then even more experience broadly in journalism, and they said, we're repositioning assets, which meant they were getting rid of five experienced hands to hire nine new people. That's the kind of thing that happens. But there was a point in there where I had always said, I don't mind being a dinosaur. I just want to stomp around until I get to decide when I get to lay down. Mm. You know, when it's time for me to go into the ooze, I will go gladly if I get to be a journalist and do my job for my whole life. And then there came a point where I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, do not be ridiculous. Nobody's going to let you decide when you lay down. It's just not going to happen. When are you going to get the phone call and what happened? Mm-hmm. And so that when that phone call came, you know, I was already taking stock of what would you do if the phone call came? And is there something else that you want to do as much or more? I have an additional side business that was starting around that time that I do not talk about much, that at some point could become my full-time business that I'm also very passionate about. But it was really a case of I started applying for, okay, let's take a look at this corporate PR job or that whatever. And I went only on two interviews. I'm normally a pretty nice guy. Like, to have me upset or angry or whatever, you got to cross me. And I found myself sitting in these interviews going, I do not want to be here. I do not want to work for these people. And when they talked to me, I found it very hard on those days in an interview situation to not be a jerk. Now, look, I'm not saying I can't be one. I'm just saying normally I don't like to bring that out unless somebody like earns that out of me. And it was just, this is not going to be fun. I can tell you that when I worked as a journalist at one point in a paper in Pennsylvania, if the people who worked for us were losing their job or left their job to go into PR and corporate work, we would make this thing. We'd take like a mason jar and we'd fill it with a cobalt blue liquid and a little something floating that I'll tell you was a handkerchief. And we put it in there, and if you can imagine what this was, it was like literally a blue jar with something floating in it, and we would label it Joe Smith's soul. Because journalism, as it existed when I started, had a soul. And you left it behind when you said, I'm going to the dark side and I'm going to go to PR. Here I was, out of the corporate world, early 50s, having gone through a surprise divorce, needing to work on my finances and what have you, and basically saying, I do not want to put my soul in a jar up on the shelf. So I took a good inventory, took a job that was kind of cool, that I really liked in journalism, that I knew would be short time, but that would pay me insanely well, which it did. I got myself caught up. I was able to size up where I should be financially. And I was able to make the choices that said, let me pursue the things that I'm passionate about and stay with the job that I love and not sell my soul. I don't want my soul in a blue jar on somebody's shelf.
Let me ask you a follow-up question about this. Just in that, you know, we picked on media as a industry that's gone through some serious upheaval. I think there's a lot of industries, mine included, pharmacy, that's going through massive upheaval. I mean, there's many more, just two of us here. Let's just pick those two. But, you know, there's many industries that just seem like they're there one day, they're gone the next, or, and the landscape just is constantly shifting. And I'm curious, in your mind, when you look at how change is coming faster and faster, if there isn't some element of that uncertainty that makes the idea of being able to gain some level of control over your finances more appealing now than ever.
I don't know that that's industry specific. I think that should be economy specific at this point. But I think that the really interesting thing to me is how many folks, and I'm not casting aspersions or making assumptions, but I do know that you guys are younger than I am, and how the financial independence movement is a lot of people who are, oh, by the way, much, in many cases, younger than I am. I'm now 57. And yet I'm also struck by the fact that regardless of industry, the number of people I know who are roughly my age, who found themselves on the wrong end of a layoff, a workforce reduction, whatever, largely because they were experienced, highly paid employees, is alarming. And so, yes, I think if you could look at your industry as I did and go, I'm a dinosaur, and know that they're never going to let you just go extinct, they're going to kill you before that happens, then yes, you have to make financial independence your goal and you have to race that clock. But I think if you are a worker in your 30s and you love your job, but you're in the corporate world, you'd better make financial independence your goal, or at some point in your 50s, the odds that you are going to face decisions that you don't want to face, that you give up the career that you've always loved or what have you, and you find yourself floundering trying to figure out what's next. I think that's another reason why you had better take on everything that underscores financial independence.
Yeah, I completely agree, Chuck. And yeah, I wanted to leave on this note. So one of our longtime listeners is a guy named Frank. And actually, you met him at FinCon this year. And he has been a reader of yours for quite some time. And he said that you used to write a column called The Stupid Investment of the Week. And I'm curious if any jump out to you, maybe one or two, as like the craziest of these stupid investments of the week.
Of this week?
Or well, just any, any week, let's say.
So I wrote Stupid Investment of the Week for 10 years for MarketWatch.com. It's important that you understand that we picked stupid intentionally because stupid is in the eye of the beholder. As Forrest Gump said, stupid is as stupid does. So we didn't want to be guilty of libel. We didn't say the worst investment of the week. And there were plenty of times where I might have been guilty of being stupid in how I picked something. But there are certain things that routinely show up in bad and stupid investments. And, you know, there are several that were favorites, but I think probably my favorite, and this sounds terrible because it makes it seem like I wrote the first one and everything was downhill from there. But the very first stupid investment of the week was fabulous. It did come up several times again, and effectively it was a Ponzi scheme. And it was a Ponzi scheme that was legally registered. So these were subordinated, non-secured corporate financing instruments. These were people looking to find a way to get extra yield that they couldn't get from a savings account. They were buying subordinated corporate notes from American Business Financial Services. If you find yourself in the weeds on some financial move you've made, look at how you get out. And if it's best for you to get out, don't go, oh my God, I stepped in it. Look what's on my shoes. I have to get out. Because many times what can happen is you make a bad situation worse. You know, if you buy a crappy annuity, and there are some really bad ones out there, if you spend that money on a bad annuity, one thing that may make it worse is leaving early. So be careful. If you find yourself with a bad investment, chalk it up to experience, but manage from here forward, because all that matters is what's next, because you can't fix what you screwed up yesterday.
Awesome. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're a syndicated columnist. I believe you have a podcast as well. People listening to this, they want to find out more about what you're working on. What is the best way to connect with you and connect with your content?
Go to moneylifeshow.com. The show is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. We do 5 days a week, 1 hour a day of interview-based talk with financial minds of all stripes, a lot of chief investment officers and strategists, and we talk specific investments at times and a lot more. We also sometimes will talk financial independence concepts, but that's really more your bailiwick than ours. And moneylifeshow.com also has a link to my columns if you're not finding them in your local newspaper. So go there, and I'm Chuck at moneylifeshow.com. We'd love to add folks to Money Life Nation.
Chuck, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. So huge thanks to Chuck for joining us on the show. And it's so awesome to see how passionate he is about what he does and realize that there's no mandate to walk away from your job. But I think what the pattern that we've seen from our audience, when we put out that request, we got so much feedback. I think many of us do feel stuck. You know, we feel like things have not panned out the way we thought they would. The job is not what we thought it would be. And we're looking for actions that we can take that will move us forward. To that end, we actually talked about it last week. We set up a post at chooseify.com/stuck where you could kind of give us some insight into what it is that you're struggling with. What is it that you want resources to help with? I mean, in our book, we kind of frame the book as earn more, spend less, enjoy the journey. And in the write-up that the Fioneers posted on their website the other day, which I really enjoyed, I'll have that actually linked in the show notes for the episode, but I really think they found the heart of what we were trying to communicate. In the review that they were mentioning, they were pulling out a couple things and, you know, thinking about this framework, earn more, spend less, enjoy the journey. If we're talking about earn more, you know, what does it look like to increase your income? And is that through building your skills, something we were just talking about today, through networking, which effectively looks like social dynamics, switching jobs, being willing to salary negotiate? You know, these are things that maybe for whatever reason, they terrify us. They terrify us. And so we're willing just to stay stuck because we don't want to ask the question and then we don't want to be responsible for what that answer actually looks like. Having the courage to know that it's okay. It's okay to say, I am stuck, just to realize that and then be able to ask that next question. What else can I do? What should I be doing? And the same with the decreasing of the expenses, the same on the spend less, being willing to identify, wow, my lifestyle is so bloated and I don't know where to start. Where can I reel it in? Should I be reeling it in? Does this represent my values? I think just being willing to make some small changes there. Stuck looks like many different things to many different people. And I think if we're talking about financial independence as a framework for life, as a philosophy, not as just a mathematical equation, we need to be willing to tackle the psychological aspects of this and then provide you the information that serves you where you are. Tell us what you're stuck on. If that's why you lean in to gain that one little bit of information that can help you move forward this week, don't wait. Don't wait until it finally lands. Tell us what you're stuck on so that we can then find and research that information and serve it up to you. This would be the most efficient way of giving you information that serves you where you are. So if you want to do that, you know, you can and should go to chooseify.com/stuck, but let's just make it even simpler. So many of you, thousands and thousands of you have sent us emails over the past 2 years. Let's just do that. Send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com this week. Super simple. In the subject line, just say, I'm stuck, or this is what I'm stuck on. Let us know, what is it? Where are you struggling? What are the resources and the techniques, the tactics? What do you want us to research? And what sort of stories do you want us to share with you on the show? We'll do it. That's what we want to do. And in terms of how we view our responsibility and what we're trying to step up to this platform to do every, you know, twice a week, it's to find the information that serves you where you are. And I think all of us get better when we can zone in on that, dial in on that information. Feedback@chooseify.com. Let us know how you're stuck this week.
So MK, what do we have in the mailbag this week?
This week we have Sue wrote in with her college hack. So she graduated with no debt. So she wrote in and said, hi, ChooseFI. I know you're looking for more college hacks, so I'd be interested in sharing my story. I went to school through QuestBridge, an organization that helps low-income students get full 4-year scholarships at high-ranking universities. I then did a combined BS-MS program and was able to get an undergrad and master's degree in 4 years, covered by a scholarship and one extra quarter, which I funded with income saved from summer and part-time jobs. Now I'm working full-time for the company I interned at for 2.5 years throughout school and very excited that I'm starting my FI journey with zero debt and a full emergency fund. Thanks for your great podcast and the support for this community.
Wow, MK, that's awesome. So QuestBridge is the organization. We'll definitely have to look into that. And who knows, maybe we can get someone on from that organization. That sounds like a real, real winner there.
You know, yeah. I was recently talking about some of the stories that we highlighted in the book. When that conversation came up, we were talking about a few individuals that had reached the point where working is optional in their early 30s. MK, you were one of those individuals that I was referencing. But, you know, I was looking at that pattern of when individuals reach the point, they reach some level of financial independence in their early 30s. What was the overlap? And almost every time they graduated school without student loan debt. Now you would think, oh, their parents maybe just paid for it, right? Or, you know, just that would be the throwaway. That'd be the way that you could just write it off as not replicable. But it wasn't the case. Now that maybe, you know, that may be coincidental, the types of individuals that we were interviewing, or you could say maybe there's enough of a pattern here that this is something that you can latch on to. These individuals as a cohort found a way, a creative way to have college either covered either by an employer, a co-op, an internship, either through scholarships or side hustles. They were able to do that, to basically graduate school for profit. And then if that was the case, if you graduated school with minimal to no, or maybe some profit, you know, at the end of this 4-year stint, everything gets easier. It's insane. So I think this is one of those massive things to figure out. You know, clearly, if you're talking to someone in their 30s, that probably is baked in. So this information isn't going to be as useful. But if you're talking about, if you're looking at yourself as a teenager that's getting ready to make decisions to go to college, or you're looking at your kids saying, wow, what would it look like to do this differently, to start asking different questions? There are individuals that have figured it out, and you can start to look for that overlap, and you can implement a few of these ideas. And even if you can't wipe out student loans entirely, what if you could cut them by 50%? What if you could cut them by 75%? It's transformative. You know, for me, we look at my 20s to 30s and we talk about the lost decade. That's what it's described. You know, that decade where you're just spending it paying off your student loan debt. That's what the college experience means for many of us. It's that lost decade. What if you don't have to pay for that for the next 10 years? Well, how cool would it be to be able to start from scratch and start building your net worth so much earlier in the game? That's an opportunity cost that is rarely talked about. So MK, with regards to the local groups, we have well over 200 local groups all around the world. And what we try to do each week is just highlight what's going on.
Yeah, well, we have two new local groups this week. One is in Salem, Oregon, and the other is in the Manila, Philippines. So very excited to see our international presence growing. I already mentioned a few of the book tour stops, which will also double as local group meetups. But we have the Kansas City Choose a Phi group is having their next 5 meetings focused on the pillars of Phi. So if you are in the Kansas City area and you are interested in learning about the basics of Phi, those fundamentals, they are going to be talking about life hacking, house hacking, travel hacking. There's going to be a holiday break, and then they're going to come back for the Wi-Fi and savings rates. So they are planned out through February talking about the pillars of Phi. And then in San Diego on October 5th, our very own Melissa Lagerquist, who is helping out with the Phi 101 course, is going to be helping to lead a discussion on travel rewards, along with Deborah Schroeder, who's from Traveling Well for Less.
And I can say Ed has vouched for Melissa's skills when it comes to travel rewards. Very, very skilled at this. So there's a lot to learn there. All right, my friends. Well, unfortunately, that is going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. And we're talking about our book, Choose a Phi, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. If I can do a shameless plug, found anywhere books are found on October 1st and available for pre-order now. But if you want to enter a drawing instead to win a free copy, that's what we do here at the end of each Friday roundup. To enter the drawing, all you need to do, just go to chooseafi.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there, leave us a short written review, then send us an email to feedback@chooseafi.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. We give away one book for every 5 written reviews that we get. We announce the winner on the Friday roundup. MK, how many winners do we have today?
Well, today we have one winner, and that is Kevin. He wrote, "This is an essential part of getting me through. Started listening to the podcast a couple of weeks ago and was instantly hooked. Consistently offers good, substantive advice that my wife and I apply in our lives. It's easy to focus solely on growing wealth, but it's the defensive strategies, life insurance, trusts, etc., that we so easily overlook. Thanks for helping us develop a well-rounded approach that will withstand all of the curves life will surely throw at us."
All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.